Welcome to the Perfectly Sane Show, episode 487. I am Chris, as always, joined by Tony.
And not coronavirus.
That's good.
But maybe don't some coronas. Us.
No, no coronas either. No corona of any kind.
That is fair. I went to an event last night, some friend's show, and part of the package is you pay $10 to get in. And it comes with a free Budweiser. And I'm like, can I just get the entry? And,
I'll skip the Budweiser. Can I get half of a good beer? Just half. I don't need the whole thing.
Well, the sad thing is it was a full bar, but like where the show was upstairs at a bar. And the upstairs tab, oh, he has Bud Light, PBR, and Coors, I think.
Oh, my God.
So, yeah. I drank my Bud Light. I was not happy about it. Just because I already paid for it, and then a friend gave me their ticket. I'm like, free beer is free beer. But yes. Yeah, not a fun night. But I introductions.
Earl is here. Not drinking Corona. I think I would have preferred a Corona in that instance, but...
Yeah, yeah.
Over those options, yes, Corona is preferable.
I did get a nice sour. So I thought it was a bit fat coming out of the tap. It's one of the sours I've had before.
I had some good beer in Boston. I don't remember what they were, but
how dare you? You don't keep track?
I did keep track the second night when we were out at the one restaurant. I did log them into Untappd.
So your steakhouse.
Yeah, I can tell you what those were. And Jeff has just joined us as well.
Oh, hello.
Hi.
Speaking of beer, Jeff is here.
Hey.
How much have you had?
I've had 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. I'm on 6.
6 Miller Lights?
No.
That's a lot of Miller Lights.
Not Miller Lights.
Not Miller Lights.
Good
Coronas?
Beer. No. Yeah.
Anti-hero?
Yes, I had Corona and lime. Yeah, well, you know what, Tony? I'll send you a picture right now of what I'm fucking drinking. But yeah, I'm drinking an anti-hero right now.
So when we were in Boston, I had a coffee stout from Two Roads Brewing called Espressway. That was
pretty
good.
I've had that. That's good.
That's,
I support your choices.
Nice, tasty. And then I had a Belgian strong golden ale called a Delirium Tremens. I did not particularly love that one.
I've never liked that. That's like a popular beer, but I've never...
Yeah, a lot of people like that beer. I'm not a huge fan.
Yeah, it's fine. It's weird.
It's kind of got like a soap type flavor.
Oh, yeah. That's delicious. Sandy.
Well, and
actually,
enough,
very much.
The bottle kind of looks like soap. Like it's this weird soapy color. Has elephants on it, though.
I mean, I like elephants.
Yeah, they're cute. But the night before, we were at a small little dive bar, and I had another. Stout there. I don't remember what it was, and a sour beer that was pretty good. So, but Earl and I are back from Boston.
Yeah,
I assume Earl, you have survived. You did not get infected with anything.
I am feeling great. I am in high spirits. Like I said, I'm just exhausted because I've been constantly on the go since last Wednesday until tonight. But no, I'm feeling great. No illnesses, no side effects, no con crud.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's good. And there's lots of opportunities for con crud.
Yes, I will say it. Chris and I met up in Boston. I noted this when we were there. One of the positive things about this coronavirus is that everybody was being sanitary. So, every studio game thing that you went to had hand sanitizer.
Yeah.
There were some that would wipe down the controllers after everybody used them. And if you've ever been to conventions or stuff like that, that does not happen often. Like, it should be standard practice, but it does not happen.
No, I saw, a lot of the booths had, like, Clorox wipes, and they were wiping down their controllers with them, and the hand sanitizer was everywhere. Lots of people wearing masks that don't help, which was kind of bothering me. But
isn't that supposed to be like if you have the sickness?
Yes, that's exactly the problem with it.
Yeah.
My favorite thing, as I pointed out, though, is, and it makes sense to kind of, is like they had escalators, and they would have like staff members at the bottom of the escalators just holding it, go wipe, so that as the escalator is moving up.
I didn't even notice that. That does make sense, though. Like,
it makes sense. It's just kind of funny. Because they're just kind of standing there with this thing as it moves up.
Yeah, so we went to PAX East. Earl played a little, probably a lot more than I did, actually. I did not start looking at and playing games until about 3 hours before I was done. Went to some panels the first day, and then the second day played in some board game tournaments, and played some board games with some old bloggers. But then finally, Jeff inspired me to go looking for a game, and I found Dangerous Driving 2.
at
Jeff's request, which was funny because when you told me about it, Jeff, I had not seen it on the floor, and I think it's just the nature of the floor, because that the game was actually on the reverse side of a game that I had saw the day before called Who's Your Daddy, which is like this weird,
which
combative parenting game.
Yeah, it's like a physics-based parenting game.
Yeah, wow. where one person plays as the baby and the other person plays as the parent is trying to stop the baby from killing itself.
Oh, I feel like I heard about this game.
It looks ridiculous. It looks like it could be fun, but only as a joke, really. But every time, the first time I saw it, I probably could have played. There was a really short line, but every time I went back after that, too many people there. So, but Dangerous Driving 2 was right on the other side of that game, and I did not find it until like over 24 hours later. Weirdly, walked up and down that show floor multiple times, and we were still finding stuff like on the last day, right before we left. Like, where the hell did this thing come from? It wasn't here before. That you just get turned around on that show floor because the signage is bad. And
yeah, I'm surprised you found signage. It's like people are like, oh, we're hanging out in the egg booth 36013. And I'm like, I have no idea where you're getting these numbers from.
So, so I did look up Dangerous Driving, and they had a booth number. And the way I found it was if you went to their map, they actually did have the booth numbers on their map. But finding it is kind of difficult. So it's like you had to find one of the large booths and be like, oh, okay, here's the Nintendo booth. And then, it's like 12 rows over this way.
So how did you find, I didn't even get a map.
There were a bunch of, so they had the big kind of a PAX welcome book, which had all the panels and everything in it.
Oh, okay. So I just completely missed that part.
Yeah. They weren't handing them out, though. You like had to find one. And then it was also on the app if you had installed the app.
Oh, God, not the app. No.
The app was cool because you could favorite or like panels you wanted to go to, and that would give you an update like a half hour beforehand. Hey, you should go get in line for this panel or for tournaments, it was really, really useful for. So our buddy Josh, Movie Guru, and my wife played in a Catan tournament. And it gave us an update that was like, oh, the Catan tournament starts in 15 minutes. You should head over to the right area for that. So it was actually a pretty useful app. And it had a really shitty map that is hard to read on. Earl, did you get to go to any of the big booths? Did you try and see anything there?
In terms of Nintendo or Square Enix, no.
Yes. I mean, there were a couple other, I guess, big booths. Like, there was Baldur's Gate 3 was there.
Oh, I did not see that. The one thing I will say is that Nintendo's booth is at the entrance of the convention center.
Yes.
Depending on how you get out of the building. So, like, one of the day, the second day I was even, I passed by their booth on my way out, and Nintendo, I'm a huge fan of Nintendo. I think they're a great company. They are a cult, though. There were people lined up in front of their, like, this was, the show fair was closed. People were making their way out. There's people lined up in front of Nintendo's booth as Nintendo has to get a Nintendo to get free swag.
Oh my god.
Yes, I think I shared a picture. There's like dozens of people lined up in this area just to kind of get some free swag, and they're all chanting along, and I'm like, this is scary.
That's terrifying.
And people would line up, and that line was ridiculous. Like, from the moment you walk in, it was like a 3-hour wait.
Well, the thing that was insane, though, is that there was three different lines. Because the line to get the Animal Crossing experience, and to fade a demo and to take pictures, there's a line to get into this store, and there was a line to get the Isabel pin. And each one of those had like its own like hour plus wait.
Crazy. Yeah, I was not. I mean, so Animal Crossing, so the Nintendo booth, which was Animal Crossing primarily, I think only Animal Crossing actually, and then Square, which was Final Fantasy VII and Final Fantasy XIV, which has been out for years now. Those were the two big games or games that are coming out in. When's Animal Crossing, Jeff?
March 20th.
So 2 weeks for Animal Crossing and a month for Final Fantasy. Like, those are your big games that they had on the floor, coming in a month.
Yeah, and I mean, to be fair, that kind of makes sense. It kind of goes to the point we're making earlier that the spring. Into like, this room's kind of empty, so even without like people canceling last minute, there just wasn't a ton of games. Like, I was surprised that there was no Resident Evil presence, but outside that of that,
strange, yeah.
And again, I assume I forgot if I mentioned this to you or somebody else, but it's the same thing that happened with The Last of Us. Is I do think that there is some sensitivity around marketing the game about like a viral infection right now, so.
Sure. And Sony probably had pulled out of PAX East before we went. It was funny. They had lots of Sony branding and marketing around the convention center and on the billboards and stuff. So Sony like put a lot of money into it prior to coming, but then there was no actual presence.
And they sent no people.
Yeah, it was kind of funny because like one of the things was like The Last of Us 2 would be on the digital billboards and stuff like that.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, that's awesome. It's nowhere in the show for her, but it's awesome that you can see
not
it.
Not at all. I tried to go to see Baldur's Gate 3. They had a pretty cool booth set up. It was a castle that was you go through like the drawbridge type thing and it goes into a theater because they didn't actually have the game on the floor to play, but they were doing guided demos. Evidently those demos were 90 minutes long.
Oh, God. Jeeves.
So like I got in line and one of the reps for them came up and was like, just to let you know, from this point, it's a 2.5 hour wait. Like, I was like, what? She's like, it's an hour to get in from where you're standing, and then it's 90 minutes inside the castle with the demo that we're showing with the guided demo. It's like, I'm good.
I don't need that much guidance. I'm
no. Sorry. I was telling Earl like that the coolest stuff there was kind of like the indie stuff, that you could actually go play. Yeah.
And play we did.
Yeah. So what did you play, Earl?
Oh, I played a lot. I actually had to write it down just so I could keep track of it. So I will speed through a few of these just so I don't. So Disjointed is a Pixu. I mean, it's somewhat above Pixu, but it's a Pixu art stealth game where you're sneaking around that good facility. It's nifty, it's neat, but and I think I told this. I forgot if I told this to you. Like at this point, like just having Pixu art kind of turns me off more than anything else to a game.
Yeah,
because I mean the Pixu art, because we'll get to games later on. Like if you have like that NES Shovel Knight look where it's like, oh, this is an 8-bit game, that's fine with me. It's when it's like, oh no, this is a Pixu. I'm like, I don't even know what generation of games this is from. I played a game called Alluris, which is a kind of a choose-your-own-adventure card game. So, essentially, it's like an RPG, like a D&D type deal, but you get like a card and you get choices. So, it's like, okay, so you're in town and this merchant approaches you. Do you sell your stuff? Do you not sell your stuff? You make one of those choices. The game tells you what happens. It gives you the next card. You make the next choice. And you just kind of keep going forward with just the choices you make on these cards. You engage in combat that way. And so, it's like, oh, I'm going to fight this creature. If you fight it, how much damage? Like I said, most of the time you end up defeating the enemy, but they take damage, and stuff like that. Like you make choices, and that like I do with the choice where I'm like, oh, okay, I'm not going to follow it. I'm not going to fight anything. And I go into a cave, and then a creature comes up, and it gets like, do you fight or do you fight? Oh, I attack the creature, and like the mage earlier in the game's like, oh, I guess you weren't a peaceful guy after all. I'm like, crap. you have a nerd. but yeah, it's a fun little game. I think it's $15. I think it's currently out on Android and iOS, and it's coming to Switch and Xbox soon.
Nice.
I played Beach Buggy Racing 2.
I saw that, yes.
Which is fine. I mean, it's good. I have Mario Kart for my kart racing needs. I do like the one thing that they had that I thought was kind of nifty. It's like when you pick up power-ups, they're on like a timer before you can actually use them. So it's kind of nifty that it's not just like pick, you know, you grab an item box and you shoot it right away. There's like a speed up time before you can activate it. And I mean, kind of like current Mario Kart, you can have up to 2 items at once. I didn't know of any way to actually switch items. So, I think you had 2 different buttons to use them. It's like one was X and one was A. So whichever button you press would activate that item.
Did you get that game for free? I think if you signed up for their newsletter or something.
Oh, I did not know that.
Yeah, I did not either. I did not sign up. But they, I think that was there. Like there was a wheel next to their thing, and like if you signed up, you got to spin the wheel, and you either got a prize or a code for the game on Steam.
Oh, that's nifty. But no, I guess I just confused that.
You got plenty of other free stuff, so.
Yes, I did. I was going to talk about the fact that technically, I mean, it's PAX related, but it wasn't like from a game company. My sneakers came in today. It's the first time I've ever gotten free sneakers at a convention, so I'm all for that.
Free's the right price. Are they nice?
Colorful.
They're very colorful. Yes. There's some, I think they're called Puma Max Raiders or something like that. If you want to look them up, it's like blue, pink, and neon. It's blue, black, white, green with shades of red. So, as my friend pointed out, and it kind of works, it kind of looks like Buzz Lightyear sneakers. If you can picture that character from Toy Story in your head,
Buzz Lightyear sneakers. Okay, I can live with that.
I played Election Year Knockout, which is a Punch Out clone, except it used, instead of like, you know, characters of different countries, it uses characters from the last really year and a half of politics. So like you have AOC, you have Bernie Sanders, Elizabeth Warren, Joe Biden, Jeb Bush is in it. And then, like, the big boss, the Mike Tyson, Mr. Dream character is Trump. And this was on this was on iOS, so it's touch-based, so how it's set up is your four quadrants are your punches. So top left, top right are your jab, and then bottom right, bottom left are your hooks. I think that's how it works. In order to dodge, you swipe in either direction. To guard, you press two of the sides down. I mean, it mostly worked, but like if I want punch out, it's been a while. But I still think the Wii version is a fantastic game.
Yeah, the Wii punch out is great. I do enjoy election years where people like will just try to exploit the fact and make games around around politics, like something like this, or
I think
there's like weird political sims and everything.
Yeah, I wrote up some thoughts on my website, and part of what I said is like this game is kind of like it's okay, but it's dated already. Like one, like Jeb Bush hasn't been a thing of importance in some time. But yeah, it's one of those things that just kind of it's like, especially being that because of how the political system is, it does seem like it's I won't get into it. It's just weird right now.
Yep.
What else have I played? Two's Out. So this was one of the themes of the convention show, is that Overcooked is in. So this is essentially Overcooked, except you're working together to remodel homes. So like you paint the walls, you recarpet the floors, you clean up messes. You have these little home projects, and you're all working together to do it in a quickest time as possible. It's not as stressful as Overcooked. There's no time limit. I mean, but there is a timer, so like you want to get it done as quickly as possible. And then you know, like if you run into each other, it slows you down because you kind of block each other's path. I did not play it, but there was Moving Out, which is also similar, and then there was one called Out of Space, which is very similar to those games combined, where you're on a space station and you're trying to get it ready to be habitable. And then there's like aliens and stuff that you have to fight that's on the space station as well. Radical Rabbit Stew it's a very cute like puzzle game where you are I forget what you are, but you're like a chef with a giant spoon, and you're trying to whack these rabbits into the pot to cook them. And so it's a puzzle game. So some of it's just as easy as like knocking them straight through. Others is trying to set it up so they kind of ricochet around the map and end up in the pot. Because some of it, like you are not on the same path as they are. So you have to kind of time it to nail them and then like have them bounce off or ricochet on stuff to get into the pot. There are some where you can collect tokens in the stages, and it's figuring out how to do that. And then, because they can take too much damage and they will explode, and then you fail that mission. But yeah, that was a really cute and simple game. Speaking of, I think I mentioned this one to you, Dogfight, which is a dogfighting game.
Yeah.
Probably it's not like dogfights in cages or something like that, where all the parts are actual dogs, and I thought that was super cute. And and then your weapons are kind of stuff associated with dogs, so you can have like a gun that shoots frisbees, or one that shoots tennis balls,
right,
or one
that
shoots mail. Yes, so it's a dog fighting game. It's fine. It's whatever. But I liked it more for the adorableness of like taking this theme and really running with it. And then I have not done it because I don't think mines would actually wear it. But as for playing it, you get a dog bandana, and they have been retweeting anybody who's taken pictures of their dogs wearing it. So that is cute to see.
Nice.
I'll take a break so other people talk for a bit.
Yeah. So Jeff, ask me about Dangerous Driving 2.
Chris,
he was not prepared to ask me this question.
No,
excuse me.
What do you want to know?
Well, all right. So they did Dangerous Driving, right? And then what did they do before that? It was
it was like their Crash Mode game.
Yeah, and I forgot the name of it. And it felt like if they combined the two of those,
right,
and they maybe polished it by a lot, like took a lot of work on just like basic shit, like just basic like UI loading,
all that. Driving had like that really bland menu.
Yeah, it's like if you took the fundamentals that, first of all, the fundamentals that you had in Burnout, and then they had like Redo. And it seems like they've been building up to a new Burnout with these games, where there was the Crash Mode game, there was this Dangerous Golf game, right? Yeah. Yeah, and it's like you've been building up to something. You got this Dangerous Driving game that was, I think, like, there's parts of it that like feel like Burnout, like feel like that good shit, but it's like everything is so rough around the edges. So like my question is, have they honed, like have they like, you know, roughed the edges, like sanded it down?
Absolutely not. To be fair, this game is only 2 months.
You're playing a rough cut.
Yeah, it is 2 months into development. So there was still like some of the weirdness that this is actually what you would expect from like a game 2 months in. Unfortunately, it was what the finished product of Dangerous Driving was, like, which was like a little buggy, cars flying off the map, and in fact, when I was racing, so it was a 2-player race. I was racing one of the devs. And I think he was letting me win. I was really just trying to like get a view of like how the map looked and how the car handled. Because I mean, I know how to drive in a Burnout game. How does it feel? Like, I don't really care about beating this dev. I kind of just want to see how the game's working. How does the crashing work? And he hit me just as we were crossing the finish line, and I glitched through a like the finish line pole, and except I was in front of him, and so it said that I won, but it just froze, and like so he's like oh, that wasn't supposed to happen. Like
he should have been like, that's exactly what's supposed to happen.
Yes, I win, and then I break the game. When I win, the game just breaks. It's done. I have finished. it was kind of what I expected, except that was also what I got in Dangerous Driving 1. So I asked them, you know, the questions that I had from having played Dangerous Driving 1, like, hey, is there going to be a soundtrack? Because there was no soundtrack to Dangerous Driving. It was their title music, and then if you wanted music in the game, you had to connect your Spotify account to it so that you could pipe music in. There will be a soundtrack.
All right.
He did not say whether it was a licensed soundtrack.
It's going to be him on his kazoo.
Here's the thing. That's where all the money went. It's going to be
the same game. It's possible. If it's licensed. He didn't say it was licensed, so it could just be that, you know, they're gonna, you know, make some like 6 or 8
driving music,
guitar tracks or you know, some dance music to pipe in as you play. I don't know.
For once, it's not my dog.
Marone.
I asked them about if there would be online out of the box, because that was something that was a big issue with Dangerous Driving. There was like the online came like 2 months later. And by then, nobody was playing the game anymore. So online out of the box, and then they're talking about having open world racing, which unfortunately brings comparisons to Burnout Paradise. That's like the people that are in charge of this company. The last big game they made was Burnout Paradise. The last game that I guess people really loved was Burnout Paradise. And
Burnout 3.
Well, but this is an open world Burnout game, right?
For me, For me.
Sure, but like...
What, Dangerous Driving 2 is? Huh? What game is?
The last big game that they made was Burnout Paradise, the Criterion.
Oh.
I guess they did like Need for Speed Hot Pursuit or whatever, but it's an open world game, so Paradise kind of matches that comparison. The guy was very, he's like, hey, we are like 8 to 10 people working on this game. It is not going to be that. Like, there will be an open world.
He's like one of the programmers also doing the promotion.
Yeah, he's a dev working on it. He's like, look, we do not have... like
we literally can't do that.
Right, we can't make that game, and unfortunately, like, games media, like, big sites like Giant Bomb and stuff are talking about this because they hadn't seen it yet. They're trying to make Burnout Paradise. That's not what, like, there will be an open world aspect to this game, but the races are all closed off, Burnout Freestyle.
See, like, my thing is like, I don't need a Burnout Paradise, but I would like a proper sequel to Burnout 3, and it feels like if you took Dangerous Driving and you took I think it's the two Dangerous Driving games, like, combined them, you almost have a Burnout game, but also, like, it's missing, like, I'm gonna go murder my dog. I'm gonna go check out what my dog's doing in a second, but, like, it feels like they almost could, like, between those two games, had a Burnout game, but minus, like, stripped of any bells and whistles, and, like, those little things count. Yeah. Like, those, the soundtrack, like, those little, like, just even menu shit, like, the UI, it counts.
Gives it personality, you know? that Dangerous Driving didn't have. Like, Dangerous Driving was like, here's a low-budget version of Burnout. They are incorporating the crash mode into this. There will be some sort of events or something in that way. There will be online multiplayer open world events as well. There's not going to be a city area, though, which I found a little weird. It's like, are you guys going to have like an urban environment to drive through? And he's like, probably not. That's a lot of work. Like, I guess he's not wrong. Like, modeling like a city grid is probably way harder than doing a big open highway sort of thing with some like side areas that you can drive off. So it's coming later this year, which is another thing. Like, it's
oh god,
3 months into development and it will be out by holiday of this year.
No, this is gonna be bad.
Super,
and only 8 people are making it.
Yeah, like 8 to 10 people are on this team. So,
oh, that seems like they're not sending themselves up for failure.
No, yeah, not at right. all. My God.
So yeah, that's something that's coming.
They may not want it, but it will be there.
Yeah, it's. I think I'm with Jeff. It's like I want these games to be good, but they seem to be taking whatever profits they make from the previous game, dumping them into their next project, and it's like everything. Like, and it's get it out as quickly as possible so we can keep the studio open.
Each game gets a little bit better, but like, you're talking from like a game that initially felt like it shouldn't have been like legal to sell, you know, like,
right.
Like, they all barely felt, like, even now, it still barely feels like a game. Like, when you're playing a game and the menu looks like placeholder, there's no music, like, it feels like you're testing a game.
Yeah, it's like, here's an early access game, right? We haven't finished everything yet, and that's what they gave us for Dangerous Driving. We'll see.
I wish them luck. I wish anybody luck, because, like, I would love... Like, the closest thing we get is for Forza Horizon in terms of, like, yep. arcade racing. And the Need for Speed games, which are bad
yeah, they haven't,
you know, like, they're serviceable at best.
Yeah, they haven't been particularly good, for me, at all this generation. I think the last good Need for Speed game we got was on the 360 PS3.
Like, for me, it's like, I want that arcade racing experience, and I don't care if it's like open world or not, or just like mission based, like racetrack based, whatever. I want that more arcadey racer outside of Mario Kart.
I am with you, Jeff. I wish them the best of luck. I just, looking at that, it's like they have a lot of ground to cover in like 7 or 8 months, and I'm not sure they're going to hit it.
It's going to be the exact same garbage pile that you played.
Yeah.
Hey, we could say that.
Yep, we played it. We paid for it. We played it, and it was my most disappointing game of the year last year. So,
bad.
See, I played a game called Season, which is it's a open world narrative adventure game where you are a kid on a bike and you are exploring. You've been sent by your tribe or your community to explore these.
He stopped talking.
He disappeared. Come back, Chris. Come back to us.
Stop my mic.
Did my mic cut out?
Yes, it did.
Yeah.
I touched the wire, so maybe that was why. That's strange. So you're exploring these this area that is destined to be wiped out by a natural disaster. A big tidal wave is coming and it's going to wipe out this area. So you've been sent in there to kind of explore the culture, talk to the people that are still there, look at the artifacts and decide what is most important to bring back to remember these people by. There doesn't seem to be a wrong answer. Like there's multiple choices that you can make. There doesn't seem to be like, oh, you picked the wrong thing. Like you're an idiot. Like you picked Christmas lights instead of the music or this cool book that somebody wrote. It's just like, here's the shit that you're putting together. I don't know how that ties together in the end because it cuts off when the tidal wave hits. and it's going to be episodic. So, I mean, the demo was about 20 minutes long. I figure each episode will probably be about an hour to an hour and a half long. It seems really cool. Like, it's a really dark premise. Like, you are the cataloger of their culture. But it also has this like upbeat kind of nice art style. It's like almost like a melancholy music. And the personality of the person you have is like just this inquisitive. I'm interested in learning about these cultures and keeping their traditions, bringing a piece of their traditions forward. Back to my culture. So it seems really cool. I'm interested in playing it when that comes out. And I'll talk about one other game. It's a game called Evergate. It is a puzzle platformer. Think Celeste mixed with like the art style of like Ori. So it's area-based puzzles where you have special powers and you're trying to get from one part of the map, the level, to like a goal area. You have to put together like interesting platforming jumps and use the powers that this little creature has to get there. It's very difficult. And what I found out is I would be a horrible streamer. like one of those people like where you know people are watching you play games all the time because there were these people like it had a line so people are watching everybody that's playing it and I'm sitting there and I can hear the people like talking behind me.
God, he sucks.
Basically, it's like what? Why does he keep doing that? I just kept doing the same thing over and over. It's like this in my mind, this is how I need to do this jump to feed, but I kept missing it and I couldn't, it didn't work. Eventually it did. So my persistence paid off, but like the people behind were just like, what are you doing? Like, why does he keep doing that? And I think that actually made me play worse.
Yeah, that makes sense.
As like you hear people criticizing you play. So I don't know. I couldn't like quit my job and play games on a stream all the time. But Evergate seemed pretty cool. It comes out really shortly, I think, in the next couple months. Right now, I think it's only on Steam and other PC storefronts. But they were using an Xbox controller, so I could see it coming to all the consoles at some point. Let's see. Tony, have you been playing anything? I didn't see anything for you on the list.
So, the only two games I've been playing, Witcher 3, I'm finally into the DLC content.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm in Toussaint, which is the DLC area.
Okay.
Which, most of the areas in The Witcher are either, like, straight out of, like, Ireland, or, like, swamp and... like not nice places. When you finally make it into the DLC of The Witcher, it's like a magical kingdom of happiness and glory. Like everything is colorful. It's like a nice place to be. So that's cool. The one problem is that I ended up there by mistake. So the DLC for Toussaint is supposed to be for a level 35 character.
Mm.
And I am only level 27.
Sorry, it's a little tough.
So I was just like wandering through the map. I didn't go there on purpose. I ended up helping these villagers fight off these bandits. The bandits were surprisingly high level. And the villagers were also being helped by these two knights who are like, okay, can you come help us on this quest in our land? So I go there and the quest is like level 35. And I'm like, what am I supposed to do? I can't hurt any of these guys. And I'm kind of in this weird middle area in the game now where my character is not high enough level to participate in any of the quests that I have, except for the main campaign quests, which would finish the game. Which I obviously don't want to do. So I'm wandering around the map trying to find things to get my character more XP. Of course, the best way to level up in the game is by finishing quests.
Right, because battling doesn't do anything.
No, you get a little bit from killing monsters, and if you're doing like side quests, you get a little bit. The one thing I've noticed, there are abandoned villages which you can kill all the monsters that are there, and you get like a 200 XP bump for that. So that's like the one thing that you can do to like seriously level up. And this was helpful, if you fight a creature that's much, much higher level than you, you get a lot of XP. So I guess there was some reason for me to be in Toussaint. So I like find a creature and like slowly whittle them down to kill them. It would take forever, and if I screwed up, I would die instantly, but you know, it's a nice way of leveling up.
It's a challenge.
Yeah. You can play the DLC with a pre-leveled up Geralt, but it seems like I've already put like, you know, 80 hours into my character. I'm going to toss him aside so that I can have like a generic Geralt out of the box. It didn't really make sense.
Right. So is that the second DLC or?
That's the second DLC. The first DLC is just an extension of the map that you're already in.
Okay.
I can't. One of them is Blood and Wine, and I can't remember the name of the other one. But Blood and Wine is the last DLC. The first DLC, it's just like the northeastern corner of the map gets expanded. So if you go up there, and again, the creatures that are up there are all way higher level than me. So like I wandered past a guarded treasure, and it's guarded by six bears that are all level 35. Well, I ran away bravely. Because what was I going to do? I was going to get killed by bears or run away. So there's that. So lots of running around the map trying to find random XP points. I'm getting there, but it's just kind of slow going, and I played so much of the game, I can feel my desire to play waning now.
Yeah, I could see that. I have heard Blood and Wine is very good.
Yeah. No, I really want to get into it, but I mean, it's going to take a while if I'm going to use this character, so I don't know. Maybe I should just go with the generic
wrap up the main game and then
exactly.
Yeah. So what was the other game you were playing?
Apex. Too much Apex.
How are you surprised by that? No, I was going to say, how are you surprised by that? You're in the group chat.
Yeah,
that's true. I wasn't surprised. It was like, I thought there might be something else.
Is it the Adam Madden?
Yeah.
Fair enough. Win any more games?
So I'm up to 3 on the season.
Nice.
I don't know where I was last time we talked. They added a new mode. There was a big patch this week, so they added a new mode, which is the same map, and you're playing the same game, but the circles are all predetermined. So, like, you're trying to find an optimal path where everyone else also knows that there's an optimal path, so it's kind of weird. Everybody's landing in the same spots. It changes, like, where all the hot spots are. So, like, if you're normally playing Apex Legends, like, you've got places like the city or, like, the ice area where everybody tends to land just because that's fun, or the party bus. Here, since the circles are all predetermined, people are, like, trying to land where the circles are going to be eventually. So you end up in fights much quicker than you normally would.
Right.
But that mode's only around for about a week. They also, like, nerfed a bunch of the guns that I used, which was annoying. Like, the Peacemaker shotgun, which now doesn't do any damage unless you shoot somebody right in the face with it.
That sucks, because that gun was awesome.
It was. Like, I ended up face-to-face with a guy last night. I shot him 3 times with it, but since it wasn't, like, right to his head, he eventually killed me. So...
I guess you made peace with it.
I really did. There's also a shield now you can pick up that gains strength as you do damage to enemies, which is an interesting idea.
Yeah.
So, you run around, you'll see the shields now have like a little circle around it. So you pick that one up. It kind of forces you to be more aggressive than you might otherwise be.
Right.
Or maybe sense. Not even like. Maybe try to like snipe and at times when you wouldn't normally otherwise snipe, just to do a little bit of damage and make your shield stronger. And they mess with the inventory. The inventory works differently now. So I'm not sure how I feel about it, but some of the items you would stack before don't stack anymore. Like grenades take up a slot all to themselves now.
Well, that sucks because you want them to stack, you know, at least like a few of them.
Yeah, the ammo doesn't stack nearly as well either, and there seems to be less of it. I mean, maybe that's just with the bad luck I was having last night, but there seems to be less of it lying around.
Don't like those changes. All right, well, I may play some more Apex at some point.
I'm still in. I got the season pass. Still got to, you know, get my $8 worth.
Right. Jeff, tell us about some Rayman.
I think Jeff died.
Cool.
Rest in peace.
I mean, not cool that he died, but...
Means back to me.
All right, yeah. Back to you, Earl.
No, I'm sorry. I was muted.
It's like, oh, Earl's going to talk. Nope, stop.
I was muted because I was, like, making noise and shit. No, but I was gonna say I've been playing like a lot of like platformers lately. Obviously, we've gone through this a million times on the show. So continuing on that road, I've been playing Rayman Legends on my Xbox, and I've been playing Rayman Legends on my Switch, and I've been playing Rayman 3 Hoodlum Havoc on my Xbox. I think both are pretty good. I don't know who's played either of these games, but...
I've not played Rayman 3. I have played Legends and Origins.
Okay, yeah. So, Legends was like the sequel to Origins, I think, right? And in Legends, you get these like scratch tickets if you get enough lumps in a level. Like that's like the things, like the little like things that are everywhere, whatever, right? The little doodads. And you get enough of those, you can like spend them and you get like these scratch tickets, and sometimes there will be levels from Origins that you unlock. So it's basically in Legends, I think you can unlock most of the previous game by collecting that's those tickets, which is pretty cool. Yeah. But I think like both Origins and Legends are like pretty good 2D platforming games. And like just revisiting it now, I'm just like, man, not only is like Rayman Legends like super solid, but it's like super packed with content too. Like there's so many fucking levels. So you're always unlocking shit, like for everything you do. Like it's just like such a jam. Like if you're into 2D platformers, that game is just like fantastic, and it's often on sale for like $10. You know what I mean? Or I think it's actually been free before. So if you got it in your library, check it out. If not, I'd say buy it.
And why have you gone back to Yooka-Laylee?
Just same reason. You know, on that trajectory. And I have to say, like, all right, so, like, I'm in the third level of this game, and it's, like, way better than I remember it. Like, it has great graphics. It has that awesome soundtrack from David Wise. It's, like, kind of what you expect out of, like, an N64 platformer, but, like, it has good camera and controls. Like,
it's certainly better. Yes, than I wonder if you'll feel the same once you get later in it.
Well, like here's I know, like, all right. So like I'm playing the first level. And I'm like, okay, this is amazing. Like, what did I not like about this? I was trying to think about it, and the only thing I remembered was, there's like a casino level that you unlock later on that's very lackluster. It's like very much just like all these kind of like, it's like a flat plain level with like just chance games like laying around, you know? Like, but like, honestly, dude, like the first three levels, like the first level is just like this big lush kind of like Green Hill Zone type area. Second level is like this awesome fucking snow ice level, and now I'm in this like spooky forest shit, and I'm like, this is great, dude. And like the characters have great design to them, like, you know, I'm sure it's been a while since you played it, but like there's like the shop salesman guy who is like a snake, and his name is Trouser, and it's just like a snake that's wearing shorts, and his tail just goes
that is a both ends very like, rare name.
It, very much, yes.
It's just like that charm, that personality, you know, like that stuff goes a long way, but also like that game looks good. Like I think Yooka-Laylee looks pretty damn good. Like, so I'm kind of like, I know I'm going to hit a wall with this game where I'm like, yeah, this game sucks. But like, honestly, like if you could pick this game up for like $10 now, which is often on sale for, like, definitely get it. Like it's totally fine.
I'll be interested if you continue playing it.
Where you end up
again? Because there was definitely like I remember really liking the first two levels. Like this is pretty cool, but it gets tiresome. It starts being just the same thing over and over again. That casino level so bad.
I do remember that, but I was starting to like wonder at some point. I'm like, is the drought so bad at this point that I think Yooka-Laylee is great? No, but I really do think, like, look, I've been playing through a lot of platformers lately and going through the eras, and like this is like as good as anything that came out in the N64 era. Like it feels really good and looks great. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, and it's that type.
It looks like you remember those N64 platformers.
I thought to say, hindsight being what it is, Was the N64 a great platform for platformers?
No.
I think... No?
No.
No.
Like,
why? It so has, like,
it has where Mario are you guys 64, going with this? I don't know. And then it has a bunch of games trying to be Mario 64. And that's it.
Banjo-Kazooie, Donkey Kong.
It's a game trying to be Mario 64. A game trying to be Mario 64.
Yeah, but every game after that, any game like that was kind of like, you know, obviously going to be taking
notes off of it. That's what I mean. And it was the problem a lot of them took away with it was like, oh, we'll just do the same levels and we'll pad it out with stuff for you to do instead of creating really fleshed out. Essentially, what became of the next generation with like the Jack and Daxter, the Rush, where it's like we're going to create these intricate worlds that happen to be in 3D.
Yeah, I mean, it was very much experimenting with 3D and 64 PlayStation era.
Yeah.
I think in some ways, some of that was very good because they were experimenting. And you look now, and we're not getting those experimental games anymore, really. Like,
I think we get them. I don't think we get them in the big retail space.
Yes. Like that it was the big then yes, we're still seeing that on the indie side, right? Like there's still companies that are taking risks, but we were getting like crazy shit out of Capcom and Nintendo. Well, we're always getting crazy shit out of Nintendo. Right? Crazy shit out of like Capcom and Square and Konami and out of Sony and you know all the big publishers were kind of like crazy doing like weird stuff and iterating on other stuff, creating new genres, and now it's all very safe coming out of the big publisher space. So but
when we get any games out of the big publisher space,
no. They're being so safe, they're not even releasing games. Soon, Tony. Soon.
Game to play.
Doom
is Samurai and Swords.
We did get a new game for this first half of the year. Well, a old game, but a game with a release date now, so.
Yes, which one are you talking about?
Ghost of Tsushima.
Yes.
Which I'm excited for. Finally a game.
June 25th.
Yeah. I'm actually
that's
surprised
good time
by
that for sure.
I'm not upset about it, but
I probably will not play it. But I think it's a great time for it.
You don't think you're going to play it at all? Your PlayStation is also like a fucking 747, so
I don't think I'm playing. I don't think I'm going to play PlayStation again. I think I'm going to just. Yeah, so I would. Yeah, I'd have to like. I did it for God of War 4. Like, I set the PlayStation up, deleted a bunch of shit off of it, bought the game digitally, played the game. And I was like, that's fine.
PlayStation 4.
But I was like, that's all right. So, Ghost of whatever the fuck comes out, and that's what I'm going to do the same thing.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, I just don't. I'm kind of done. I'm ready to move on to whatever next system is for them. I'm happy with just two consoles set up to my TV, not fucking four.
Understandable.
Five or whatever the fuck.
I got the
Turbo Graphics coming soon, too. Gotta make room for that.
A couple weeks for that. Mm-hmm. I am actually Sony's first half of this year lineup starting next month is actually pretty strong with Final Fantasy VII, then The Last of Us Part Two, and Ghost of Tsushima. So,
to one of the dates for those, do we know them?
What was that, Jeff?
One of the dates for those, do we know though? Like
Final Fantasy VII is early April. Last of Us is May, and Ghosts of Tsushima is June. Did you say 25th, 26th, Earl, Tony?
One of those dates.
Yeah,
that's very good compared to everyone else, especially you know.
Yeah, because like, really, it's Animal Crossing and Doom.
I think any year, though, like, that's a really strong, like, 1-2-3 punt.
Yeah, that's an excellent lineup. For be an excellent lineup at any point of the year, but for a very dry first half of 2020, it's very
dry. I'm playing ukulele, guys.
Yeah.
That's on you.
I mean, like, I'm starving over
that
here.
That was a choice that you made.
I'm sorry, though. Like, for real, like, if you're in those types of games, like, it's not that, like, I remember being down on it when it came out, and I'm, like, playing it now, and I'm, like, compared to, like, some of the stuff I've played recently from back then, it's pretty awesome. Like,
well, so. You're still early, so.
I know.
It's just problematic then. I had in time, so got that going for it.
Had in time. You have not played it yet, have you?
No.
Play it.
You got to put your money where your mouth is and
not play it.
Yeah.
Well, speaking of platformers, I finished Bloodstained: Ritual of the Night and Ori and the Blind Forest.
Just in time for the sequel.
Yeah.
There's an event today going. Is it out soon or?
Next week or okay. this this week. I think it's the 9th, so next Tuesday.
Very soon.
Yeah. So one, everyone was like, oh, you should play Ori and the Blind Forest. You should play Ori and the Blind Forest. It's great. It's an excellent Metroidvania platformer. And not disputing any of that. But nobody was like, hey, this game starts off in the most depressing manner that it could. It's like the video game version of Up, where so you start off, your Ori is this little, like, you know, sprite, tree sprite or whatever, and gets blown away from the tree of life or whatever the hell it is. Mm-hmm. Ends up, it's now orphaned, gets taken in by this giant panda type creature,
which then dies.
Yes. Well, actually the world then dies, and like all the plant life kind of dies, and they don't have any food. So she starves to death. She gives like the last piece of fruit to Ori.
10 out of 10.
Before she dies. And then you die.
Masterpiece.
You're then like struggling on, and you die before some magical, mystical bullshit brings you back. But Jesus Christ, like the first half hour of that game is super depressing. Once it gets going, it's a pretty Metroid type game, but and it's a pretty good one of them too. It's just nobody was so like, they should prepare you for that shit.
No, but like, all right. So it's been a long time since I played it, right? And I remember the main thing I remember from that game is like the escape sequences are really hard. Did you feel that too, or
there's a couple of them, and they're difficult.
But the other thing I remember is like, I just want to make sure, because like it is described as a Metroid type game. Is that how it is? Like, you get new ability that helps you expand the map in a way. Yes. Like, you know.
Yeah, you find these trees that give you new abilities, and those abilities like then give you access to new areas of the map.
And which, it's like all one big map.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's why.
Yeah, it's a giant map. Everything interlocks. I did not get all the abilities, so you don't need all of them to finish the game. But there are definitely key ones that,
like double jump.
Yeah, you need the double jump. You'll need the dash move. Need the stomp. You'll need to find the feather so you can float on the air currents. You'll need the one that allows you to go under. So yeah, there's definitely it is a Metroid type game, and a very good one of them too.
Oh, and not to loop it back, but like ukulele has that really awesome hook too. It's like the same thing where it's is like the more little feathers you collect in each level, like you could buy like, moves, but that like gives you access to parts of the levels that you
would get. And if you want 100% that game, you need to get all those abilities.
Yeah.
So yeah, Ori is really good. Looking forward to the sequel in a couple days. And I finished Bloodstained.
Good job.
Both.
I got stuck at some boss. I can't remember which one.
Which boss?
Dude, it was like last summer. I don't remember. So I got really far. I got stuck multiple times.
So.
And then I finally got to another boss, and I got like so frustrated, and I quit.
There's a couple bosses like that that were just annoying. And it's like, it's all right. I need to level myself up or find a better sword. There's actually a sword that kind of breaks the game. And once you get the ability to flip upside down, you can get that sword, and it makes the end game stuff a little bit easier.
It's like flip the map, like
So you flip it upside down. So it's not like
that's cool
in Symphony of the Night. Like there was the upside down castle. This is it's similar, except there isn't a whole other castle that is upside down for you to explore. It's the same castle, but things are accessible. By you flipping the map, so you being able to walk on the ceiling opens up other areas that you couldn't get to before.
Okay, gotcha.
And
you can, like, flip it anytime you want.
What was that?
You can flip it anytime you want, or yep. Like,
yeah, it's like a button combo. It's like down an A or something like that, and she'll yell out something and flip the map. I got two of the three endings. There's one ending, which doesn't give you credits, and it is like you beat the guy that is like kind of projected as the final boss. But when you get that, you'll get an ending, and then it'll just say game over.
Oh,
and that's because there's a bunch of steps that you kind of need to go through, which the game doesn't really point you in that direction. You either need to stumble across it or look it up, which is shitty. But yeah, there's like a bunch of different hoops you have to jump through to get to the actual real final boss. And to get there, you need to get this special sword. You need to fight the boss that you think is the final boss, but in the middle of that battle, attack the moon.
Damn you, moon.
And the moon is actually a demon that is controlling everything. As the moon does. And then there's like a whole nother level of like other bullshit you have to jump through to beat it. But so I mostly played with a guide for that second part. Like, all right, so I need to get this sword, and here's how I do that. And then I need to attack this guy until the moon starts glowing red, and then attack the moon. And then I got to do like X, Y, and Z next. It was a whole thing. But Bloodstained Ritual of the Night is it's in the books. So.
So, what do you think? Like, do you like that? Like, gamer, I thought it was pretty good, honestly. From what
it is, it's pretty good. I've seen some people going, "Oh, I think it's better than like Symphony of the Night," and like, I don't think it's quite on the same level as the Castlevania stuff. It is a good version of that, though.
Yeah, like, it's like faded in my memory. So like I don't remember what my complaints were with it, but I just remember going, this is like
what I wanted. And considering it could have gone so much.
Yeah, like it could have gone like the, what was that, Mega Man ripoff that they tried
to do? Mighty Number 9.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'm happy with both Bloodstained games. I think Circle of the Moon is the better game. That's the Castlevania 3 modeled type game. I think I actually like that one a little more. But Ritual of the Night is a very good game. It is just loaded with like a bunch of bullshit that is not necessary, like the cooking and the shards and
yeah.
It's like a bunch of stuff that's just like layered on that is not necessary.
You were talking about like that 8-bit game that got like it was like a I think it was like a Kickstarter bonus, right? Yep.
Yes, Circle of the Moon.
Circle of the Moon. Yeah, that game is actually like I would give that game like a solid 8 out of 10 at least. You know, I mean like it's which is crazy because it was kind of like a promotional thing.
It was just a throw.
I got the, and it's a great game.
But yeah, so I played both of those. I also started Resident Evil 3 on the PlayStation.
To prepare for Resident Evil 3?
Prepare for Resident Evil 3, the remake. Okay. I kind of wanted to compare them.
Yeah, that's fair.
Like how does this one play against the new one? Because they did make some significant changes in the remake of 2.
Yeah.
And I remember really liking Resident Evil 3. I'm not really liking it right now. Nemesis is a pain in the ass. And I remember him being a pain in the ass when I played those games originally, but maybe it's just that I'm not as good at them anymore. but he gave me some fits last night when I was playing it.
Hey, those tank controls. Like, I think, I don't know, I just trust them to translate it and it will feel better. Because, like, I don't know, I think running from something like that all the time with those tank controls is kind of a pain in the ass.
So I recently played Dino Crisis and Dino Crisis 2, and I didn't feel the tank controls as badly there. And I did play Resident Evil 2 last year as well. I think it's Resident Evil 3 pretty much immediately throws you into a boss fight with Nemesis. And that's not where that game is good. Like, those games are good when you're fighting like zombies one-on-one or maybe a couple zombies coming at you. And then you're exploring and figuring out the puzzles that it has. Combat's not the best part of it.
Yeah.
And when they throw you into a boss fight where like Nemesis has a lot of hit points and you're putting a lot of bullets into him, and it's just it's not enjoyable, it's not fun. But we'll see.
Yeah.
Earl, you anything else?
Okay, before I get to more PAX impressions, I did want to mention, partially because Jeff was so passionate, and I think you were as well, on my bus ride to Boston, I ended up actually downloading and playing Sayonara Wild Hearts.
Okay, yeah.
And I thought that was a great little title. I mean, partially because it finishes in like 90 minutes.
Yeah, it's very short.
It's very short.
I hope you played with like earbuds or something in like...
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. My Switch carry case has a charger and a set of headphones for itself. I really wish they had Bluetooth support, but that's another story. But no, I thought it was a really, really cute game. It's a game that came out last year, yes.
All right, rate it out of 10. What would you say?
It's hard to rate out of 10 because it's so different than anything out. Because it's really exactly. Just kind of like an interactive experience.
That's what you do with that. You give it a 10.
That's not necessarily how that goes, Jeff. But okay, I love Jeff's passion for it.
I get what you go
because it's so unique. The game surprised me so hard, and like I was smiling from beginning to end. Like,
oh my god,
it was like it really was.
What about
it really
your cliche thesaurus? And let's hear them all. Come on,
no, it really was like a surprise. Time. It was just like, oh, cool, like really captivated me, and then it was like over. It was like this quick fling, and I loved it. And that's why it was like a 10 for me.
Oh yeah, and I think the style's amazing. I think how it changes up the gameplay so rapidly, and it all works. Like it's never like none of the segments I ever thought didn't feel well.
And the music's good.
Yeah,
right.
I thought the way the game introduced I thought the way the game introduced stuff was fantastic. I like the fact that it's essentially a story about somebody going through a breakup.
Yeah.
It all worked for me. I think it may be a bit much at $15 for what it is. But overall, I enjoyed it, and I would pay it again, and I probably am going to pay it again.
And the mode that I would recommend, if you do play album. It again, Earl, is the album mode, which is just the full thing straight through, no breaks.
That's like the SSX3, go from the top of the mountain to the bottom at once.
It's awesome way to play that game.
Yeah, I'm actually curious about that. Like, is it start to finish, or is it like if you die once, game over?
No. You can die. Like, it's exactly. It's just it stops the level break.
Playlist version of it.
It's like everything together. It's one solid through. You can die though.
Oh, so it's like one continuous experience. Okay.
Yep.
Yeah.
Gotcha. Yeah, because I did pay it all. Like, again, I paid it on the bus ride one sitting. Yeah, I hope that I was able to finish it. It's not a drain on the battery, which some of the games I play are. But yeah, I recommend it. I think, like I said, really good. And it was one of our Game of the Year contenders last year.
Yeah. It is a game where you ride a dragon and you kiss people.
Yes. I'm just very happy that, like, I remember,
and
like...
RVR helmet.
Yeah, you want to do RVR helmet.
I remember recommending it to all you guys, like everyone like who has tried it has enjoyed it. Because it is an awesome game.
All right, can I try it and ruin it for all of you?
Right. I think you would love it, dude. I don't know, unless you like just hate joy. It's kind of like
I hate
Met Tony.
Met Tony, you're right?
Shot I hate it. Joy.
Yeah, it is. That's another plus for it though, I think, Jeff. Like, so many of the games we play are so like dour and like dystopian, and this one is just like kind of this like personal journey that is like a bit dark, and you know, because she's going through a breakup, but it's also like this fun uplifting thing that
it's like a fucking awesome pop music video that you're playing through, like it's
awesome. Very 80s.
Very, very great style to it.
Yeah. So yeah, I recommend.
What else did you play at PAX?
Okay, and we're running, so I'm just gonna run through. It's sad. I have the ones I actually enjoyed to the second half, but I'm like running out of time, so I'll just run through them. Ultimate Rifle Ice Rink is a kind of an arcade sports game. It's the start of a series, so this one's hockey. It uses sports stars from a bunch of different sports. And so this one there was I forget their names. It was a soccer star, a baseball star, and a football star. I tried. They wouldn't allow you to pick different characters. It's a ton of fun. It's really short. It reminded me very much of the spirit of Mario Strikers, which is one of my favorite sports games. It's very fast. It's very fast paced. It's very simplified. It's 3-on-3. I mean, it's really 2-on-2, and then you have a goalie. You have like super moves. You can charge up attacks to essentially what you're doing. You're trying to just fling the puck as much as possible into the goaltender to have them take damage and then eventually score. And then at some points you can do super moves that are worth more than one. So yes, very much reminds me of Mario Strikers Charge. If you ever played that,
what was that called again?
It's called Ultimate Rival Ice Rink. It's right now currently on Apple Arcade.
Okay.
But because I tweeted about it, I guess the company was monitoring it. So they spoke to me over Twitter and they let me know that the console versions will be coming later this year.
Nice. I'm always down for a new hockey game.
There was another hockey game recently that was like a violent hockey game. Am I crazy?
I mean, all hockey games are somewhat violent.
Like, there was another like indie, like it was like, you know, like a $10 game.
Yeah, there was there's beer league hockey.
No,
there's another one out there.
Yeah,
as well. I don't remember what it was called. But yes, I believe I know what you were talking about.
There was a game called Taken's House Party
that Blades is still demographic. Sorry.
So this is a VR asymmetrical multiplayer game. there, one person was in VR and essentially just a giant head and hands in a kitchen as you try to take out these takings. And you can do various things to torture them. You could put them in a toaster, burn them. You could set them on fire on the stove. You could press them in a waffle maker. You could put them in a sink incinerator.
All right, what game is this again? I need to play.
Yeah. It's called Taken's House Party. It's I'll be paid as a Taken because I am not wearing a VR helmet during PAX.
No.
Congratulations to all you brave souls that did. But yeah,
I hope you're enjoying your pink eye this week.
I will be honest. It was not even Corona related. I'm just not going to wear a VR helmet in a public event. Like, those things do not get wiped down that often. If they do, it's usually just like an alcohol wipe.
No, and I will say this, those brave souls that were doing it, you guys are hysterical. Because people playing VR in public is really funny.
Yeah, yeah.
And I don't know what game it was, but this one lady, she was swinging her arms, like fighting, and she almost hit the dev. And it was amazing. But yes, Taken's House Party.
Yes. Okay. What else do we have? We have Swim Sanity, which is where I got my shark fin from. And that is essentially it's an underwater joust type game. So you're underwater, so you're swimming and stuff, and you just take out your opponents with your guns, and you can unlock power-ups as you go. You do damage, you special moves. It's a ton of fun. I actually had a fun with it. I came in third, but whatever.
Funny thing about that shark fin hat that Earl got was there was another company there with a shark fin foam hat that they were giving out
for Man Eater.
Yeah, where I guess it's a multiplayer game where you play as the shark.
Yeah. So yes, it was kind of funny that like it has to start being like, oh, we got shark fins, somebody else is gonna give out shark fins like pads. And it's like two companies doing it and I'm like, well, sucks for you. But I got my shark fin. All that matters. Emote? I don't know. It is a 3D platformer where you control this little creature, I forget what it's called. I don't even know if it has a name. But essentially, the creature can attach itself to different stuff, and it kind of becomes like a puzzle platformer game where you're trying to navigate the space. And the style is amazing. It has like this really fluorescent style to it. And that's what initially caught my eye, and then I sat there and watched somebody play for a few minutes, and then I had to get on it. And I had a ton of fun with it. The one downside is, according to the developer, I triggered one of the OE segments in the game that you can somehow break the game at currently. He said, oh, you two other people have done that. So my demo was cut short, but it was fun. It was fun while it lasted. Skyracket, and I am working on an article on this for my site as well. It is a brick break. Is that the most famous one people know? It's the game where you kind of have like the ball and you have the little pad and you're trying
break
to
out.
Break the brick.
Arkanoid.
Okay. Yes, they kept the same brick break, but I'm like, Breakout is the one.
That's
Breakout. Yes.
So they turned that into a shoot 'em up essentially. So you are a space cadet who has a tennis racket. And enemies shoot balls at you, and you can whack it back with the tennis ball. And it will bounce around the screen, and it can come back to you, and you can hit it again. And the more you kind of rally with it, the stronger your attacks become. And then there's certain attacks you can't hit back. So, it becomes like a shoot 'em up where you're trying to dodge the attacks while also continuing to hit this ball or these various things. And then there's some enemies that attack you, and then there's some enemies which are literally just giant bricks, which you, again, hit the ball into. And then the boss battle was a giant banana with tentacles. So the style is also really insane. I had a ton of fun with it. I came back. I saw it on Friday, and I came back Saturday to check it out again. I did not get the platforms. I'm sure it's on the website. But, yeah, I really recommended this.
That sounds cool.
There's another game. I think it's out already. It's called Sacrifice Your Friends.
I'm all for that.
Tony's in.
Sacrifice all of them.
Which to me had the spirit of Power Stone, I don't think I've ever gotten an opportunity to talk about Power Stone on this show. Power Stone is one of my absolute favorite games on the Dreamcast. It's one of my favorite fighting games in general. So it's a four-player fighting brawler, essentially. From that isometric viewpoint, so you're kind of not top down, but kind of from the from like the top side.
It's like an arena.
Yeah, and you walk around the map and you pick up various weapons that you can use to. It's like Smash Brothers, where you knock your opponents either off the stage or into hazards that knock them out. So it's not really a health bar system exactly. So you know, there's like a bazooka. There's sword, there's an axe you can toss at people, there's spears, there's grappling guns, a bunch of various weapons. And then each level has its own environmental traps. So there's one that's kind of inspired by Indiana Jones, where you can trigger giant boulders, there's spikes that come out of the bottom of the floor, there are arrows that can shoot out of the wall. And then when you do enough damage, you can transform into the entity that you have chosen to sacrifice your friends to. So for the sake of the demo, they had Cthulhu, and I can never pronounce the other creature's name, but essentially you press Y, and with Cthulhu you turned into him, and you can fly around the stage just whacking people off. And the other one kind of has like an electric attack. So, and then the thing is, you can do this all at once. So, like, all four of you can turn into the same creature at once. But, and it's
just whacking each other.
Yeah. It's a ton of fun. We played something like 3 or 4 games in a row. I had an absolute blast with this. So, yeah, if you get a chance, I'd recommend it.
Sounds like a good party game.
Oh, yeah. I think it's great. It's a great kind of couch. It's like, it's not as intense or as in-depth as a Smash Brothers, but it's kind of in that vein.
Nice.
And then I played Panzer Paladin, which is the 8-bit game I was telling you about. It's very kind of inspired by Shovel Knight in style.
Okay.
And as far as gameplay, it is a mixture of Blaster Master, Castlevania, and Mega Man.
I like those games.
As do I, and I enjoyed this game a great deal. So you are in a giant mech suit, and the mech suit has various weapons. You pick up various weapons, and at Castlevania you can kind of break walls and find weapons hidden in the wall spaces like that. Like Blaster Master, there are segments of the game where you will have to get out of the suit and control the character inside the suit to either unlock special portals or, refill your tank or to go into places that the suit just can't fit into. And like Mega Man, well, one is a platformer, so it has those elements. But you fight bosses, and as you defeat them, you unlock certain abilities that then become part of your giant robot. So, it was just the first level. It's about, I think, like 5 minutes or something like that. But in that 5 minutes, I was like, I need to get this game. I had an absolute blast with it. It was one of my, I think it was between that and Skyrocket as my favorite games at PAX this year.
Nice. Weirdly, I saw none of the games Earl played as well. I didn't even see them on the floor in some cases. I did see the Panzer Paladin one. I just did not stop to play that one. That sounds really cool.
Yes. And I also play some board games, but that's for another day.
Yep. The board games there were massive. There's tons of board games to play. We could talk about that on a different day though. That's about it, I guess, for this week. Might have Ori next week, right?
Some of you might. Is it?
It's Game Pass related, so.
Oh, okay. Where I might have Ori next week then.
Yeah.
I can't wait to play it.
Quick question, and because I was going to get it, but I've not. I mentioned this is my first night home. Did nobody play the Final Fantasy VII demo?
I did not. It's the same reason I did not get in line for it at PAX East. It's out in a month.
Well, I
think I'm going to play it regardless.
So. I, I, oh, okay. I don't have my PlayStation hooked up, and so no.
Yeah, I think it's a game that I'm going to be playing regardless. So just like I'm just going to wait to experience.
Why?
That. I have no nostalgia for it, so like I just don't care. Like I have no interest.
That's fair.
I don't even know when it's coming out. When is it coming out?
Early April.
April 10th or something like that.
Yeah.
I'll be playing Resident Evil.
It's a week after.
It didn't Resident even, Evil. Like, register to me, yeah.
Yep. So, did you play it, Earl?
Oh, like I said, I've not had a chance to. I am going to download it now for next week, so that was what. And hopefully, because I think I'm very, very near the end. I think I'm up to the second to last battle in Pokemon Sword and Shield. So hopefully that will be done next week. Too.
If you do end up playing the Final Fantasy demo, try out Classic Mode. I'm interested to hear about that.
Okay.
I know that the real time combat is the main kind of draw of it. I'm interested to see what Classic Mode is like, though. I have no problem waiting for a month to play it, but I am interested to see what they did for their turn-based sort of thing. Yeah, and that's it. Tony, you got anything else?
I do not.
Right. Well, Earl and I are happy to be back. Earl is happy to finally have a break for a moment.
Yes, it is nice. And work was not as hectic as I assumed, so that's good to know.
It was Jeff's birthday a couple days ago, so happy birthday, Jeff.
I made it! Another year!
All right! Woo. Next year's his Sweet 16. Get excited.
Eventually.
Yeah, and Earl, your birthday is coming up in April.
Yes.
Yeah. So, with some birthdays coming up. Jeff's just passed. He survived Super Tuesday.
I haven't passed yet.
I don't know if he survived Super Tuesday.
I'm going to pass at some point, but that's not writing me off yet.
But I don't know if I don't think we talked about this. I did want to talk about one piece of news. And if we talked about this, I apologize. Did we talk about Microsoft announcing that if you buy an Xbox One title, that you will get it on Xbox Series
X? I don't know if we did or not. I know that the big one was Cyberpunk, right? That
Well, the big one, I think, is Microsoft says it, so I think any of their games will.
Yes.
But yeah, Cyberpunk was the first kind of third-party game that came out. Said.
So it's just like the seamless thing where it's like it just adapts to whatever console you have. Like, is that kind of how it is now, or what?
Well, I meant more in the sense that it's future-proof. So, like, let's say you get Cyberpunk, but you don't get an Xbox Series One X this year. Next year, if you get one, you get that version of the game as well for free.
Like it's digital, in your library.
Not.
Yeah.
So it is kind of a separate thing.
They're separate games, yeah. So like if you buy, let's say, Halo Infinite, right? This, let's say that comes out in September.
Yeah, so it's gonna be like a whole different download for.
Well, it's gonna be a whole different download in general.
Right. But yes, you'll get whatever that upgraded version is for the Series X, which is really cool. It's
essentially forward compatibility.
Yes, it's the logical extension of what happened last gen, where if you got like Assassin's Creed, was it Assassin's Creed 4 that came out right before?
Yes.
Before the systems, and then like... last gen, it was if you paid like $10 or whatever, you could upgrade to the new version.
Do you guys with like Xbox, for instance, like all like your kind of how it is now, like whatever you own digitally, like you own like Xbox Original,
yep,
360, yeah, etc. Like, you think that's just going to carry over? Because I think it will.
Yes.
They said that.
I think what's his name? Phil Spencer said that like your library transfers with you. So it'll play all your original Xbox games, your 360 games, your Xbox One games, and then the new Series X exclusive games.
It's honestly like the thing I love about Xbox right now. And like it's just so seamless. Like it's just like kind of every era, every modern era, anyway. Like
and the sad thing is they're doing a better job of that than Sony, which has the better the better legacy. You know,
deeper library, anyways. Yeah.
With their history, their library is way more vast. But right now, Microsoft is the one that is preserving the digital library and the history of their console better.
And like, just play it,
I hope Sony has something for the PS5 that allows that, and they also need a Game Pass type equivalent.
Oh, and the other thing we didn't talk about, which is big, but it's also kind of expected, which GDC was canceled.
I did have that on the list. We should skip over that because we had so many games to talk about. Yeah, GDC was postponed.
It's going postponed. If that's what they're saying. That's
the wording that they're using because. Probably because if they call it canceled, then there's lots of money involved in that.
Yeah, and I get that, but the feeling I got from this show for when I spoke to a few publishers and developers at their booth was it was a blessing and a curse for some of them because it is so soon after PAX that you kind of you get home from PAX, you get a few days, and you're back on the road setting this up.
Yeah.
But it's also this giant curse because since GDC is more of a industry frenzy event, it's not a consumer event, that it's an opportunity for a lot of these studios to go out and make a name for themselves or to make connections or find publishers.
Yeah.
And without that, it's kind of this big gap that they're missing now. So but again, it's expected. We're going to see, we have seen a lot of that over the last week. We're out of events are being canceled, if not that. We've seen, I think Bungie was the first one that came out today and announced that they are letting all of their employees work from home for the foreseeable future.
Yep.
My company is weighing that option currently, so that might be happening for me.
Yeah, we get to find out about that tomorrow.
We are continuing to monitor the situation and make precautions. It is a very precarious position that we're in since the library is a public utility and most of our jobs are front-facing and deal with consumers. You can't really work from home
right.
and work via library.
Right.
Okay, I have a serious question, Earl. You work in a library, right?
Yes.
Do most people who work in the library have like serious like antisocial like personalities or something? Because like everyone in my library who works there is like very like unfriendly.
I've honestly never found that to be the experience.
I swear to God, dude.
I think this might be an experience unique to you, Jeff.
I swear, like this
like,
one lady,
oh, it's
like
that guy.
This one lady, like. No, she's like always pretends like she's working on her computer as I'm walking in, and I'm just like, "Yeah, hi, how you doing?"
That,
and she's
that
like,
might
you're like
be
we'll
a
barely,
thing,
she will barely like nod at you, and I'm like, "Okay, like I guess and, you don't have a personality or whatever." I like it's kind of like, freaks me out.
I don't even mean this as somebody who works with them, but like my experience, they've always been like. They might be stressed because they do, but they've always been so friendly and welcoming, and they've always kind of greeted you, and they are so helpful a lot of the times. They will stand with people and help them find stuff that they need, or like if you know, like sometimes you don't necessarily know what you're looking for, and they will help you narrow it down. Even you know, like this isn't too behind the scenes. I'm sure everybody has this at their job. But even when they talk about the customer experience, it's always positive stories. It's always about like this, you know, this one person who came in and had this great idea, wanted to find this one book. Yeah, like any experience I've had with them has always been great. And yeah, I've never found them to be antisocial.
Okay, there's just a couple of people at my library because, like, there are
that creepy guy who smells like Miller Lite. He's back in the
No, there are a couple of people who are like very friendly, but like, there's some people like, there's like two people who work there that like are just like say hi and they like barely will even say like anything to you. Like you're like just like. Don't even acknowledge you. Like, okay. But, like, there are a couple of people that are very nice, but I just find it weird because there's, like, a couple of people that, like, at that library that just are so unfriendly. Like, is it just, like, the post office where everyone is mean to people? Because, like, the people that work at the front of the post office are so mean at the DMV.
I was going to say, though, like, if anything, I would expect the opposite because, like, the job is a very social front-facing job. Like, you are talking to people
you would
constantly.
Think, right?
Like, the post office is different because it's business transactional. Like, librarians
but
aren't the people
still, why, like, why be
checking
mean
out your books
office?
And stuff.
It's like, you're selling stamps and shit. Like,
well,
whatever.
I get why people are mean at the post office because a lot of the time, like, you have to realize, like, they're getting crap from a lot of people for stuff that's not their fault, but they're the face of the post office. So they're getting crap for mailmen or drivers and stuff like that who missed the package or they said it didn't get
there.
Yeah,
but, like, dude, they're so, like...
Unlike the library,
dude,
where it's like, here's this great book for free.
I've seen it in action.
Read it.
Yeah.
This is all also, like, censor my name. I don't know who I am. I don't work at the post office.
Not at all. Yeah, so wash your hands.
Wash your hands.
Cover your mouth if you're coughing, and don't go to work if you are sick.
Actually, don't cover your mouth if you're coughing. Cough into your sleeve like you're supposed to. The same thing you're supposed to sneeze with.
Also,
wash your
by the way, I've noticed every time I've touched my face in the last, like, week.
Yeah.
And the problem is, like, I'm never going to stop.
Nope. You're not.
I have washed my hands a little bit more, but a little more like hands washy.
I mean, washing hands is possible. I think not touching your face is just—it's not possible. Distinctly,
no,
for humans, you just touch your face. It's just something that happens.
I do it like 800 times a day.
Is it not touching your face, or is it not? Because it's very hard not to touch your face. And the minute they tell me not to touch my face, I realize, like, oh crap, I touch my face all the time.
Right.
Yep. You're not stopping yourself from doing that. It's just going to happen.
Yeah. So don't make your own hand sanitizer with Tito's vodka.
That's right. It's only 40% alcohol. You need 60%.
At least 60%. So if you need to, get some moonshine like an adult.
How about 91% isopropyl alcohol?
At
that point, you don't need hand sanitizer, though.
It has a flammable label on it.
I would also point out, as somebody pointed out to me, like, hand sanitizer is antibacterial. This is a virus, so it's not like it's cleaning.
This particular kind of virus is highly susceptible to alcohol.
Okay.
So, yes, hand sanitizer does work on coronavirus.
I'm just saying in general, like, I'm happy that people are being more hygienic.
It's
nice.
The one thing I will say,
start washing your asses too.
Yes, especially at cons. There was some funky smell.
Oh my god.
But my mom's a nurse, and one of my best friends' wife is a doctor. Don't buy face mask unless you're sick. Because face masks don't prevent you from getting sick. They prevent other people from catching anything you have. Find a face mask to wear around the street. Doesn't do anything but create a shortage for people who need them, who work in the medical field. They want
them. Yeah, don't do that. It's shitty. You don't need it.
Yeah.
It's not helping you anyway.
It was so funny to see at PAX, there were people wearing face masks, which is whatever. But there's also people who walked around in rubber gloves. And I
did not see those people.
There were people walking around in rubber gloves. And I'm just like, I get it, but that's a bit much. That's a bit much.
Did you not see people with face masks?
Oh, yeah. No, I saw people with face masks, yeah.
Were face masks. Some of the people, I guess there's either anime or video game face mask. So a lot of people had like the branded ones that worked into their outfits. And I thought that was kind of nifty. I'm like, oh, so you're wearing a face mask anyhow, but you worked it into like a cosplay thing. So
yeah, that's cool. Fine. Also, it's not one of the medical disposable face masks that
are
in short supply currently.
Yeah. I'm with hand sanitizer. And toilet paper.
Yeah.
Dear God, why? I don't understand the toilet paper thing.
I think people
they're hoarding it so that you don't run out, I guess, when you're stuck at home part for 10 weeks.
Well, essentially that. And part of it, I think Australia's having a toilet paper shortage because of that. But I think a lot of people saw what happened in China, and then in their head, the worst case scenario is now that you're going to be, we're going to be quarantined for months on end. And I mean, it might happen, but it does not seem like, I don't think we're going to get a profit set easily. Because I have friends who are stockpiling food and stuff. And I'm like, I get it to a degree, but I'm not like, I ask people, what are you stockpiling for? Because it's not like a snowstorm where it's like, oh, we're going to have to stockpile for a week. Are you stockpiling for a few days, a couple of weeks, a few months? What are we doing here?
You don't need to buy 17 things of 32 toilet papers, though. Stop that shit.
No pun intended.
Yeah. Exactly. Just be safe. Be clean. Be safe. We're all going to be good. Maybe not
E3. E3 is a whole different beast right now. Because it's news, but I don't know what to make of it. It's the people who were panicked, not the people who were ESA is behind E3, but I think the people who were the creative directors of E3 this year. I am a bit dropped out today. Yeah. So who knows what E3 is going to be?
Yeah. Well, that was a question going into it. So it's going to be interesting this year. But we'll keep updating you on the coronavirus as we hear more. And we'll be back next week with Ori and the Will of the Wisps, and maybe some other stuff as well. I still want to play Yakuza 0. That is now out.
Yeah.
On Game Pass.
Xbox for free.
So I want to try that. I've always heard good things about that series. So, all right. Jeff, say goodnight.
Good night.